some of Memvav Amadeus, the last line on the page. Amar Rava Amar Ravuna, Mechor li be'elu kana v'yeshlo alav ona. So imagine the following scenario. Reuben goes over to Shimon with a bunch of coins in his hand, and he says to Shimon, I'd like to buy that item that you're holding, your watch, whatever it is. And he says, great, no problem. And Shimon is not particularly, disturbing, and he just takes the money. He doesn't start counting the coins. He has no idea how much money he's taking. So the transaction is valid. They both agreed to it. However, if it turns out that the amount of money that Reuben gave for the watch turns out to be, let's say, 1/6 less than the market value, so it's still going to be subject to onah. So, for example, let's say he wanted to buy his $12,000 Rolex watch, but he only gave him $10,000, so he still owes him the remainder for the value. Then the Gemara points out, Kana afa gav de lo bashach, the cheva de lo kapit kana dechi chalifin dam. Then the Gemara points out further that, again, like we just pointed out, Reuben acquires that watch even if he has not yet done a mashicha. Normally, again, as we know, to acquire that, I mean, you have to do some kind of a physical action. You have to pull the item, you have to pick it up, whatever it is. But in this case, because Shimon himself is not particular, Vaharaya, he's not, discerning about the number of coins he's receiving, this is the halachic equivalent, says the Gemara, of a kinyan chalipin, which we're going to discuss extensively on today's daf. A kinyan chalipin is, again, essentially when you pick up the item, it's more symbolic. It's symbolic of the transaction. It's not to say that the item itself is worth the value of the thing that you're trying to acquire. It symbolizes the fact that you're now going to acquire the item. Then the Gemara says, this is comparable to a kinyan chalipin. V'yeshlo alav onah. And again, as we noted in the Gemara a second ago, it's also subject to the laws of Onah, which again means that if you underpaid or overpaid by a sixth, so you're still going to have to either compensate or return that overcharge. Again, this is all within the opinion of Rava, the name of Rav Huna, because when Reuben comes to Shimon and says, sell me that watch for these coins, again, the fact that Shimon was not discerning about the amount of coins that he received is an indication that he's yes, the sale is valid, but it's still considered to be subject to the regular rules of Onah. However, Rav Abba of Rav Huna Machor Li Ve'ilu Kana Ve'ilu Alav Onah, Rav Abba disagrees. Rav Abba says that basically the fact that Shimon is not discerning about the number of coins that he receives is an indication that he's waiving any potential rights or any potential liability that may stem from the Isser of Onah. Okay, the Gemara says, Pshita Damim Ve'im Makbid Alam, Hakar Rina Dekane, Dekacha Lipid Damu, Chalipin Makbid Alam. The Gemara says the following, that the first halacha, the following halacha is intuitive, is obvious, namely that if you have a scenario where, again, the case that we just illustrated, Reuben goes to Shimon, says, I want to buy your watch, here are some coins, Shimon is not particularly discerning about the number of coins, that transaction is 100% valid, it's basically the halachic equivalent of a kinyan chalipin. The question is, what if you do an actual kinyan chalipin, you pick up a handkerchief, you pick up a pen with the intention of purchasing the other item, but in this scenario, one or both of the parties involved are makbid regarding the valuation. Usually, let's say, for example, when you go to sell your chametz, you pick up the pen, thereby, allowing the rabbi to acquire the chametz. Or if you want to do just a normal chalipin, you pick up a handkerchief. And now, the item you're trying to acquire now belongs to you. But again, no one thinks that, your $20,000 worth of whiskey in your basement is the same value as a pen. It's obviously not the case. But the question is, what if the parties involved are makbid that the chalipins should be of equal value? That the item you're picking up is not merely symbolic, but you want it to actually be of the same value of the item that you're acquiring. So Amar Rav Abba Bar Abba, Tashma, Harisha Hayatofis Parasu Ba'omer. That's the following. Reuben is standing around grabbing onto his cow. Uvacha Dinu Va'omerlo Paras Chalava. Then Shimon comes along and says, what are you doing with this cow? So he says, Lachamura Nitzar. He says, I'm trying to trade it for a donkey. So Shimon says, oh, Yeshli Chamur Shani Nosafa. I have a donkey that I'll give to you. Paras Chalava. He says, how much, does your cow cost? Bechachacha. It costs X amount. Chamor chabechama, bechach bechach. Then Reuben says, how much does your donkey cost X and F? Masha bala chamora sapara. So Shimon, the owner of the donkey, goes ahead and does a meshicha on Reuben's cow with the intention of swapping the cow for the donkey. Velo hispik bala hapara limshoch es hachamor ad shemnes hachamor. The problem is that Reuben does not get around to doing a meshicha on Shimon's donkey that he's trying to acquire before Shimon's donkey drops dead. So the donkey now dies. In other words, Shimon does a meshicha on the cow, but before Reuben has a chance to do a meshicha on Shimon's donkey, the donkey dies. So the din is lo kana bala chamora sapara. The halacha is that Shimon, the owner of the donkey, does not acquire Reuben's cow, even though he did a meshicha on it already. Shma mina chalipin u'makbid alei lo kana. which is an indication that when you have a king and chalipin, but both parties or one of the parties are makbid, that the valuations should be equal, it's insufficient to have only one of the parties do chalipin. Reuven also has to do mashicha on the donkey he's trying to acquire. The fact that the donkey died before he had a chance to do that means that the entire transaction is now invalidated. So ask the Gemara, Amar Rava, Atu chalipin bishutani askinan, dilo kapte? What? Every person who does a king and chalipin, they're all fools. They're all not going to insist on an equal valuation of the items. In other words, there's no downside on insisting on this. There's only an upside. If you insist that the items be of equal value, so that means that if something like this happens where the donkey died before Reuven got a chance to do the Mashicha, that means that the, you know, the acquisition on Shimon's behalf never went through, but there is no upside in essentially not being mocked. Why would anyone not be mocked on this when they're trying to do a king and chalipin? So the Gemara says, you're right. Elakol chalipin mikbat kapti v'kadim. Normal, regular king chalipin, both parties are makbid that everything should be of equal valuation. The hacha b'may askinam, the amar lay chamor b'fara v'tale, u'mashach es hapara, v'adayim lo mashach es hatale, the lo havali v'shicha ma'alya. The Gemara throws in one additional piece of information to this case that wasn't there before, which is that it's not simply a trade or a swap one for one of the donkey for the cow, but rather Reuven is trying to exchange his donkey for a cow and a lamb. And the thing is that Reuven did a mashicha on the cow, but he has not yet done a mashicha on the lamb, but so the lamb died before he had a chance to do the mashicha. So the Gemara says that's not a mashicha ma'alya. That's not a full-fledged mashicha because he never acquired all of the items that he was trying to acquire. That's the scenario that the Gemara refers to. But a normal king in chalipin where it's just one guy is trying to get a cow and swap it for a donkey, so of course both parties are going to be mocked to make sure that they're getting things of equal valuation. Okay, the Gemara says, going back to the first thing we mentioned today, which again, this case, Reuven comes to Shimon, he says, I want to buy your watch, I have some coins, Shimon takes the coins, he doesn't really look at the amount of coins that he's receiving. He said that the kinyan is valid, and at least according to Rava's version of Ravuna, he says that that transaction is still going to be subject to the laws of Una, which again means that if Reuven underpaid him for the value of the watch, he still has to compensate him for the remainder. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, Lema Sama Ravuna, Batveya Nasa Chalipin. The Gemara says, this whole scenario seemingly presupposes that Rav Huda is of the opinion that you can perform a king and chalipin with coins. That's not a assumption at all, because the Gemara had a whole discussion about this and seemed to conclude, if anything, the opposite, that you cannot perform a king and chalipin with money. King and chalipin means that you're taking an object, a pen, a handkerchief, whatever, in order to effectuate a symbolic transfer of the item. But money seemingly doesn't work. And yet here, Rav Huda seems to assume that by handing the coins over, I'm now acquiring the watch. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. No. Rav Huda summer like Rav Yochanan da'amar dvar Torah ma'os konos. Umibnei ma'amru mashkicha kona gzera sheva yomar lo nisrifu chitecha ba'aliya milsa deshkicha gazru barabanan umilsa delo shkicha lo gazru barabanan. The Gemara says, it's not true. That really, Rav Huda holds like the standard approach that you cannot use money for a kinyan chalipin. However, Rav Huda happens to start with the famous opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. There's a machlokes which we're going to discuss extensively throughout the rest of the daf between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to whether money effectuates a kinyan. Let's say I go to the store, I want to buy whatever, a bag of potatoes at the store, and I pay money for the potatoes, but I have not yet picked up the bag of potatoes, and then I put the money down on the counter, I give it to the cashier, and then all of a sudden all the potatoes in the store, whatever, they all spoil, they all fall away, all the potatoes are gone now. So the question is that on me or is that on the store? Like, in other words, did I already purchase the potatoes and now it's my problem? Or no, I haven't physically done a mashicha on the potatoes yet. So that's machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan holds that nida oraisa, money effectuates a king. Once you pay money for something, even if you haven't touched the item yet, it doesn't matter, you now own the item. And we'll see in a second that Reish Lakish disagrees with this. But the Gemara says, okay, so according to Rabbi Yochanan, if money already affects a kinyan, what's the purpose of mashicha? Why did Chazal institute a gzera derabanan that you should do a mashicha? So the Gemara explains the following, that it's a gzera, what's called nisrifu chitecha ba'aliya. Imagine the following. Let's say Reuven goes ahead and purchases a bunch of bushels of grain from Shimon, but he doesn't have a chance to go pick it up right away. He buys them today, and he's going to come back in a few weeks to go pick them up. And then all of a sudden, before he has a chance to come and claim the grain that he bought, a fire breaks out in the house, and all the grain is now on fire. Now, if Shimon thinks that the grain already belongs to Reuven, he has no incentive to try and save the grain. It's your grain that's burning. It's not mine. It's not my problem anymore. So therefore, Chazal made a takana that we're going to institute mashicha, that Reuven has to pull on the grain in order to acquire him, because anything short of that is going to disincentivize Shimon from wanting to save the grain in the case of a potential fire. So the Gemara explains that Chazal only make takanas, only make these kinds of institutions for what's called a milsa d'shchicha, something which is relatively common. But, you know, the assumption that you're going to, you know, have a scenario where the guy is coming with money and Shimon is not going to be discerning about the number of coins, that's already a little bit of a stretch. It's maybe not such a stretch to say that if Reuben is trying to buy wheat from Shimon and he says, I'm going to come pick it up in a couple of weeks, okay, maybe it's not so crazy to think that a fire might break out and it might destroy all the grain. So therefore, Chazal made a katan in this specific instance that you're going to require the shifa. Okay, so then the verse says, Amar le'mar u'na b'reidu rab nachman r'lashki, atud pachi masni tula, and then I quote just basically another version of the same idea, which is that Rav Huna basically states explicitly that money cannot be used to effectuate a king with chalipin, which again is the point that we already addressed a little bit earlier on this other. Okay. Then the Gemara wants to know, Bandek Konin. When we talk about a king with chalipin, whose items, whose objects, whose pens and handkerchiefs exactly are we using to effectuate this transfer of ownership? Rav Amar v'chelo shel konet, the nechalei l'konet de lehevei mak nekonet, there was a machlokas between Rav and Levi, whose utensils, items, pens, handkerchiefs, etc., are we using to effectuate a kid? According to Rav, we're using the kalim of the kona, of the person who is trying to receive the item, right? So if Reuven is trying to receive Shimon's cow, donkey, whatever, so it's his kalim that has to be provided to effectuate that kinyan, that kinyan. Why is that the case? So Rav explains the reason for that is because Reuven would prefer that Shimon acquires his whatever, handkerchief, pen, whatever it is, because that way Shimon will 100% resolve to transfer ownership fully of the animal or the item that he is trying to acquire. Levi, in contrast, disagrees, and Gemara is going to explain Levi's logic a little later on, but Levi said, no, you have to use the kalim shel Bachman. You have to use Shimon's kalim, the one who is transferring the ownership to Reuven. Shimon is the one who has to provide the handkerchief, pet, etc., in order to effectuate the kinyan chalip. So Amar Le Rav Huna mi diskarta l'Rava, ula Levi da Amar b'chelav shel machne, ha-kakane ara agam glima. So the Gemara said, hang on a second. You just told me a second ago that according to Levi, it's Shimon, the machne, the one who's attempting to transfer his item to Reuven. He's the one who has to supply the kalim to effectuate a kinyan chalip. Now, that would mean the following. Imagine that Reuven is attempting to purchase a piece of land from Shimon, and Shimon uses his cloak, his garment, as a mechanism to effectuate such a kinyan. So the Gemara says, what you just established is that Reuven is acquiring land agav a cloak. In other words, by dint of a garment. The problem with that is, says the Gemara in Cain, havu in the chasim sheyesh lahen achrayas, the niknin in the chasim she'in lahen achrayas, va'anan itchatanan. The chasim she'in lahen achrayas, niknin in the chasim sheyesh lahen achrayas. This theory, this notion that I'm acquiring the land by dint of the cloak, because I picked up Shimon's cloak, I now own his land, that seems to contradict an explicit Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin. The Mishnah in Kiddushin describes the mechanisms of a Kinyan Adam, which we discussed in the past. Kinyan Adam basically means that, let's say I want to purchase both Karka and the Taltalin from you. I want to buy a piece of land, and I also want to buy a car. I want to buy whatever, a watch from you. So there's a Chiddush of the Mishnah in Kiddushin that I can acquire your Taltalin agav your karka. I don't have to make a separate kinyan on the watch or the car. As long as the item is on the land, and there's a whole discussion in the Kiddushin about whether it has to physically be on the land or just has to be in the vicinity, whatever it is. But the bottom line is that I don't have to make a separate kinyan on the metalkalin. I can acquire the metalkalin agav the karka, by dint of the land. So the question is, hang on a second. That mechanism only works in one direction. I can acquire your watch or your car, agav your land, but I can't acquire your land, agav your garden. That's what it seems to be going on here. It seems that because Reuven is taking Shimon's garden, he's now acquiring Shimon's land. But that seems to basically contravene what it says in the Mishnah in Kiddushin. To which the Gemara says, no. Amar le, ihava levi hacha, have a mapically apach pulsi denura. So the Gemara comments, Rava comments to Rav Huna, he says, if Levi were here, he would whip you, he would flog you with rods of fire. He's basically saying that you completely misunderstood or misrepresented Levi's position. Nisvaras glima machtele, dehahi hana dekamekhalo mine gomar va'atnele. You thought that it was the transference of Shimon's garment to Reuven. That was the mechanism by which Reuven acquired Shimon's property. That's not the case at all. It was the benefit or the pleasure, the enjoyment that Shimon gets by seeing Reuven accepting his garment that causes the transference of ownership. It's not the actual acceptance of the garment that effectuates the kinyan. It's not, in other words, a kinyan chalipin in that sense of the word, but it's the enjoyment or it's the benefit that Shimon gets that someone like Reuven is accepting his garment from him. That's what causes the land to be transferred. In fact, Mark explains, Kisanai. V'zos lefanim v'Yisrael al ha'gi'ulav yal ha'timura l'kayin kol davar shalaf ishna alo v'nasa l'reim. One of the very famous pasuk from Megillas Rus. The pasuk in Megillas Rus describes the mechanism of Kinyan Chalitin. This is the original source for Kinyan Chalitin. The pasuk says in Megillas Rus that this has already been an ancient practice amongst the Jewish people, al ha'gi'ulav yal ha'timura, on the redemption and on the exchange, l'kayin kol davar, to fulfill all matters, shalaf ishna alo v'nasa l'reim. Each man removes his shoe and gives it to the other. What does the pasuk mean exactly? So the Gemara explains. Geula zo mechira, v'chein hu omer lo yigael. So the word geula is a reference to a sale. And the pasuk says in Parshas B'chukosai, lo yigael, that you're not allowed to sell a steachuza. Temura zo chalipen, v'chein hu omer lo yachalipenu v'lo yamir oso. Temura is, of course, a reference to exchanging. In this context, the Kenyan chalipen. We know the concept of temura in its literal sense in Parshas B'chukosai means that you're not allowed to swap or exchange one carbon for another, but in this context, it means that you can't exchange. In other words, that there's a concept of a kinyan chalipin of exchanging one item for another. L'kayin kol davar shalaf ish na'alo v'nasan l'reyehu, min nasan l'mi. So the question is, who is handing the shoe to whom in the story of Rus? So the Gemara has a machlokas about this. Boaz nasan l'goel, Rabbi Yehuda omer goel nasan l'Boaz. According to the Tanna Kamma, it was Boaz who's giving the shoe over to the Goel. The Goel was Ploni Almoni, who was the closest surviving relative of Elimelech, who was attempting to acquire the land from Naomi. So according to the Tanna Kamma, Boaz was the recipient. He was the one who was trying to acquire that land from the Goel, from Ploni Almoni. So according to the Tanna Kamma, he holds that Caleb shall come next. Boaz, as the recipient, had to be the one to supply the shoe. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, no, Caleb Shalmachta, that it was the Goel, it was Ploni Almoni. He was the one who had to supply the shoe in order to effectuate the kinyan and the transference of the land to Boaz. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tana, Konin Bechli, Afal Pi Ishe'in Bo Shvepruta, Amar Rav Nachman Oshanu Ela Bechli Avo Bechere Lo, Rav Sheshes Amar Afilu Bechere. So the Gemara has the following machlokas. The Gemara says that a kinyan chalipin can be effectuated with a kli, even if that kli is worth less than a pruta. Typically, for most kinyanim, the item that you're trying to acquire has to be worth at least a pruta in order to have any sort of shir kashir. Let's say, for example, you're trying to marry a woman. So for kiddush, if you're trying to do kiddush kesef, you need to give at least a pruta. However, if you're trying to effectuate a kinyan chalipin, let's say you're picking up a pen or a handkerchief, and the pen or handkerchief are worth less than a pruta, so that's totally fine. The kinyan chalipin is 100% valid. However, there's a detailed machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes regarding the scope of that permissibility. When we say that the kli can be worth less than a pruta and the kinyan chalipin will still be valid, Rav Nachman argues that's only for a kli. If you're using a utensil, you're using a pen, a handkerchief, then yes, it can be worth less than a pruta. But if you're attempting to use peiros, which again literally means produce, but it can really just mean anything that's not a kli, so then it must be worth at least a pruta. And Rav Sheshes disagrees. Rav Sheshes says, no, even if you're not using a kli, you're using produce or something else, that can also be worth less than a pruta, and the kinyan chalipin can still be effectuated. So what's this machlokas revolving around? My time with Rav Nachman. Why does Rav Nachman insist that only a kli specifically can be worth less than a pruta for a kinyan chalipin, but peiros must be worth at least a pruta? Amar kra na'alo, na'alin, midi acharin alo. Because if you look again at the pasuk in Megillas Rus, it talks about Boaz or the Goa, one of them removing the shoe. So the shoe is considered to be a paradigm. That's a kli. So only the shoe can effectuate a kinyan chalipin, but nothing else can. My tainei de Rav Sheshes, amar kra l'kayin kol davar. Rav Sheshes will argue that in the very same pasuk it says l'kayin kol davar, implying that any item, whether it's produce or a kli, can be used to effectuate a kinyan chalipin. How does Rav Nachman deflect that argument? How does he understand the pasuk l'kayim kol davar? So the Gemara says, "Hahu l'kayim kol davar d'niknin b'mina." Rav Nachman understands the phrase l'kayim kol davar means that anything can be the subject of the kinyan chalipin, meaning to say you can acquire anything via the shoe. Not that any item can be used to effectuate the kinyan, but you can acquire any item via a kinyan chalipin. How does Rav Sheshes understand the fact that the pasuk seemingly is describing a shoe, meaning to say that it sounds like only a kli is valid for a kinyan chalipin, not peiros? Rav Sheshes will argue that the shoe is merely an example, that just as a shoe is a davar hamesuyam, it's a whole complete object, that's what's valid to effectuate a kinyan chalipin to the exclusion of, let's say, for example, a half a pomegranate, a half nut, that would not be valid, but a whole pomegranate or nut would be valid. Again, so peiros would be valid to effectuate a kinyan chalipin. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes v'rei de Ravidi. Now analyzing a clause that we write in a shtar mechira. Let's say again, for example, Reuben is attempting to purchase something for Shimon, and they write up a shtar. So one of the clauses that's written in the shtar is b'mana d'kasher l'mikni of it, with a utensil of the kli that is fitting or that is valid to acquire with it. So what does that phrase mean? B'mana liafuke migarav sheshes da'amar kodim b'feiros. The first word, b'mana, that the kitten is effectuated via a kli, is obviously coming to exclude Rav Sheshesh's position, his position that you can own that you can even acquire with peros. Obviously, this phrase is only conforming to Rav Nachman that only a kli is valid for a kitten chalipin. Dechasher la'afuke mi'dishmul da'amer konin b'maruka. Then the word dechasher, that's fitting to acquire with, that is to the exclusion of Shmuel's position, because Shmuel says that you can even use a kli that's made from date pants or from cow dung, things that are not really used or edible, you can still use those for a kinyan chalipin. So that word the kasher is to exclude this position of Shmuel. Lemiknia laafuke mi delevi de amar bechilo shalmakna kamash malon lemiknia velo lekanye. Then the third word lemiknia, to acquire with or to transfer ownership of, is to exclude the shita of Levi that we discussed extensively on the previous Abbot, because Levi holds that you can only effectuate a kinyan chalipin with Caleb Shalkona, with the utensils or items of the one who's acquiring. So the word lemiknia means to transfer ownership, in contrast to the word likhanuye, which means to acquire for yourself. So clearly this phraseology is siding with Rav as opposed to Levi. And then finally the word bay, with it, Rav Papa Amar Lema'ute Matbeya. Rav Papa says that to exclude money, as we already explained earlier on the doc, that we passed in that Ein Matbeya Nasa Chalipin. You cannot use money to effectuate a kidney Chalipin. Rav Zvid V'Isema Rav Ashi Amar Lema'ute Isure Hana'a. And then the Gemara quotes a second opinion that the word day comes to exclude an item which is Asur Bahana, which would basically mean that you cannot do a kidney Chalipin with, let's say, I don't know, Basur Bahala, the hair of a Nazir, all the things that are Asur Bahana. The Gemara has a second version, Ika Da'amre, day. Amar Rav Papa lema'ute matveya, dechasher amar Rav Zvid v'isema Rav Ashi lema'ute yisurei hana, avamurika lo itchrif. In the second version, the Gemara just has, again, it's the same concept, but it basically plays out in different words of the phrase. So in the second version, the Gemara says that the word day again excludes money, that we cannot use money for a kidney chalipin. The word dechasher is excluding yisurei hana, we cannot use yisurei hana to effectuate a kidney chalipin. And then in terms of not using the date pits and the things made from cow dung, so those you don't even need a phrase for, because it's intuitive that you would not be able to use those things for a kidney chalipin. Okay. Then the Mishnah told us, asimon kona es hamadeya. You can use what's called an asimon in order to acquire coins. So the question is, what does that mean? My asimon, amar Rav, maus ha'itanus besimim leves amerikas. Rav defines an asimon as these tokens that were used to get into a bathhouse. If you wanted to enter a bathhouse, you got a special token, and then you would walk in with the token to go use whatever room in the bathhouse. So ask the Gemara Meisvei, Ein v'chal in Meisr Sheni al Asimon v'lo al Moos Hanitanos Pesimon Leves Amerchas v'chal da Asimon lav Moos Hanitanos Pesimon Leves Amerchas. The problem is that there's a brisa in Meisr Sheni that talks about not desacralizing Meisr Sheni neither with an Asimon nor with bathhouse tokens. So implying, of course, that bathhouse tokens are not the same thing as an Asimon. The Chitema Perusha Kavifaris, maybe we'll argue that, no, the brisa was just explaining what an Asimon is. That's also not accurate. V'halo talahach. V'chalin Meisr Sheni al Asimon divrei Rabbi Dosa. V'chacham elomrin ein v'chalin. You can't make that argument either, because there's another brisa that says explicitly that there's a machlokes between Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim regarding whether you can desacralize Meisr Sheni with an asimon, but everyone agrees that you're not allowed to use bathhouse tokens to desacralize Meisr Sheni. So obviously, an asimon cannot be a bathhouse token. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ema amar Rabbi Yochanan, my asimon, pulsa. It must be that an asimon is basically a blank coin. It's a coin that wasn't minted. There's no mint. There's no imprint on the coin. The Azda Rabbi Yochanan Letaveh. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Dosa v'Rabbi Yishmael Amru Davarecha. Rabbi Dosa Hada Amran. Rabbi Yishmael Mayi V'Sanya. V'Tzarta HaKesef B'Yadecha. L'Rabos Kol Davar HaNitzrar B'Yad Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva over the Rabbos Kol Davar She'yesh Alav Tzura. The Gemara points out that this opinion of Rabbi Dosa, it also falls in line with Rabbi Yishmael, which is in contrast to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. There's a machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva regarding how to understand a pasuk that we've already referenced in the last couple of weeks. In Parshas Re'eh, the pasuk when it talks about redeeming and desacralizing Ma'aser Sheni, the pasuk says, "Vitzarta ha'kesef biyadecha." You're going to buy the money in your hand. The question is, what exactly does that mean? Rabbi Yishmael is of the opinion that it's basically just a davar ha'nitzvar biyad, anything which you're holding bound together in your hand. Meaning to say, the money itself, the coins themselves, do not need to have any sort of an imprint or an image on them. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees and says, no, that the money, in order to desacralize Ma'aser Sheni, it must be something which has a tzura. It must have an imprint on the coins in order to desacralize Ma'aser Sheni. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Ketzat, Mashachem and Imperos, Velo Nasa Lo Maos, Eno Yechol Achzuba. The Mishnah presented the following contrasting scenarios. If, let's say, for example, two people agreed to, whatever, to sell, you know, again, Reuven agreed to sell something to Shimon, and then Shimon went ahead and he did have a shicha on the item, but he hasn't paid for the item yet, so that Shimon can no longer renege on the transaction. But if let's say, for example, he paid for the item but did not yet do a mishicha, so then he could still back out of the transaction. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Dvar Torah Ma'os Konos, U'mepnei Ma'amru Mishicha Kona, Zera Shema Yonarlo, Nisrafu Chitaka Ba'aliyah. So again, we already referenced this point back in the previous Amar. Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that Midoraisa, money affects an acquisition, money acquires an item. Why did Chazal insist on Mashiach, as we already explained earlier? It was a gzeira, lest Reuven buys some wheat from Shimon, and he comes and picks up a few weeks later, and in the interim, a fire breaks out, and that's going to disincentivize Shimon from wanting to salvage the wheat because it doesn't belong to him. So asks the Gemara, so, man, the shot of the lake of Baishalim, okay, but the arsonist, the guy who lit the fire, should be responsible to pay Shimon for the wheat. So the Gemara says, no, el gzeira shematipol de lake of Baonis. No, we're concerned that the fire broke out Ba'onet. In other words, maybe not the fire. It was just, whatever, it was in California, and it was very dry, and the fire broke out. No one specifically lit the fire. So the Gemara says, Imok bas lehu b'rishu say, masar nashi tarachu matzil, v'ilo lo masar nashi tarachu matzil. Basically, if you tell Reuven that if you don't salvage the wheat, then you're going to have to compensate Shimon, he's going to have a much larger incentive to want to salvage the wheat. But if you tell him it already belongs to Shimon, so he's going to have no incentive to try and salvage the wheat. Reish Lakish Amar, Meshicha Mefureshes Benatorah. Again, this was the sheet of Reish Lakish that we alluded to on the previous summit. This is in contrast to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan told us that Mida Oraisa money acquires. Reish Lakish disagrees and says, no, that a Kinyan Meshicha is explicit in the Torah. That in other words, if you pay for an item, according to Reish Lakish, you don't own that item Mida Oraisa until you do a Meshicha, until you pull or do some kind of a physical action on the item. My time of the Reish Lakish, Amar Kra, the Chisim Kerum, Mimkar La'am Yisecha, O Kano Niyana Yisecha, Dor Hanikne Miyad Liyad. Reish Lakish interprets a pasuk in Parshas Bahar. The pasuk says, the Chisim Kerum, Mimkar La'am Yisecha, when you purchase an item from your friend, O Kano Niyana Yisecha, or you acquire it from your friend's hand, Reish Lakish understands that to mean Dor Hanikne Miyad Liyad. It's a physical acquisition. I'm taking the item, I'm pulling the item, I'm reining the item in from my colleague, from my friend. According to Reish Lakish, this is the source for a Kenyan Meshicha. The question, of course, is, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Miyad Lema'ute Karka Deleis Be'oda. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says that the word Miyad in the Pasuk in Bahar that says, O Kano, Miyad Amisecha, is to exclude Karka. Because if I purchase Karka, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Karka is not subject to the laws of Ona. In contrast to what we were discussing earlier, where, let's say, Reuven went ahead to buy Shimon's watch, and he underpaid him by a sixth, where the laws of Ona apply, where the transaction is valid, but Reuven still has to compensate the difference. Says Rabbi Yochanan, that does not apply to Karka. You can undercharge, overcharge Karka for any crazy percentage that you want. The laws of Ona do not apply. Whether there's an issur of Ona is a separate question. It might still be usher to do that, but it's not a forcible embezzlement. If you undercharge or overcharge when it comes to Karka, that is not subject to the laws of Ona. Vireish Lakish, im kin, lichto krav, chisim karu, mimkar, biyara misecha, altonu, o kana lovely. So Reish Lakish will deflect this argument and will say the following. If Rabbi Yochanan was correct that the phrase miyara misecha was coming to exclude karka, that karka is not subject to the laws of Ona, the pasuk simply could have said, the chisim karu, mimkar, miyara misecha, altonu. When you purchase something from your friend's hand, don't violate Ona. Why does it throw in the words o kana? Or when you acquire, so the Gemara says, Shema Minal Meshicha, you see from that additional clause, O Kano, that Meshicha, this is the source, says Reish Lakish, that Meshicha acquires Mida Oraisa. But Rabbi Yochanan, O Kano, by all. How does Rabbi Yochanan interpret that phrase? So the Gemara says, Mibay Melechidisanya, Mechistim Kiru Mimkar Altonu. Again, the Pasuk says that when you acquire something from someone else, don't violate Ona'a, Ainli Elishedisana Lokayach, Nisana Bocher Minayan. I only know that there's a prohibition of Ona'a when it comes to the lokeach, when it comes to the buyer. In other words, that if the buyer underpaid for the item, that there's that there's an issur of hodaah. How do I know that hodaah works in the other direction if the seller overcharged? So the Gemara says, "Kamud lomar o kano al tonu." Because if you're acquiring an item, you, in other words, don't violate hodaah. So in other words, the idea being that hodaah works in both directions. The Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish will argue that both of these things are implicit in the pasuk anyway. You don't need a separate clause of Okano, says Reish Lakish, to teach me that there's a prohibition of Oda in both directions, that Oda works from the buyer's or the seller's perspective. That's already intuitive, that's already implicit in the Isra of Oda, and therefore Reish Lakish uses that additional clause of Okano to teach me the concept of Mishich. Oh, the verse says Tanakh, Rav Shimon Omer, Kol Shehakesef Yado, Yado Alha El Yoda. Comes from Shimon and tells us that whoever has the money has the advantage. Whoever has the money has the upper hand. What does that mean practically? So that means that basically the seller is the one who can renege on a transaction once he has the money in his possession, but the buyer cannot. So the Gemara explains, E Amar Bishlama Ma'us Kodos, Nishamachi Mocher Matsi Hadarme, Lokeach Lo Matsi Hadarme, Ella E Amar Ma'us Enam Kodos, Lokeach Nami Li Hadarme. The Gemara says, this idea that only the seller can renege once he has the money in his possession, but not the buyer, it seems to only ring true according to Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan, again, is the one who says that Nida Oraisa Ma'us Kodos, that money acquires Minat Torah. So it makes a lot of sense. Once the mocher has the money, the transaction is over, so now if the mocher wants to renege, that's up to him. But the lokeach, he has no power. He already gave up the money to acquire the item. But according to Reish Lakish, that you don't acquire until you do Meshicha, so that it's basically a two-way street. In other words, the same way that the mocher has the power to renege, the lokeach, the buyer, should have a similar power as well. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Lecha Reish Lakish, Aliba de Rabbi Shimon Loka Amina, Tika Amina, Aliba de Rabbana. So the Gemara clarifies, Reish Lakish clarifies that I never raised the question within the worldview of Rav Shimon. In other words, according to Rav Shimon, you're 100% right that it only goes in one direction, that only the seller would be able to renege and not the buyer. The question is according to the Rabbanan who disagree with Rav Shimon. So again, Bishlam al Reish Lakish, Hayu the Ika Bein Rav Shimon the Rabbanan, El al Rav Yochanan by Ika Bein Rav Shimon the Rabbanan. The Gemara says, I understand according to Reish Lakish, there's a document in Machlokes between Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan. Rav Shimon is basically siding with Rabbi Yochanan that Mida Oraisa Ma'us Kodos, that money acquires Min HaTorah, and the Rabbanim are going to side with Reish Lakish. They're going to say that no, that Meshicha works Min HaTorah, paying money doesn't mean anything, and therefore the buyer and the seller both have equal rights to back out of the transaction. But according to Rabbi Yochanan says that Mida Oraisa, once you pay money, that's it. The transaction is finalized, even if no one picked up the item yet. So the question is, what's the machlokes between Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan? According to Rabbi Yochanan, everyone agrees that ma'us kodos, the money acquires. What exactly are Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan fighting about? So the Gemara says, Ika b'nai d'Rav Chista, the Amar Rav Chista, k'derek shetiknu meshicha b'mochrin, kach tiknu meshicha b'lekukos, Rav Shimon leisle d'Rav Chista, Rabbanan islehu d'Rav Chista. The Gemara says that the machlokes between Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is regarding whether we subscribe to the statement of Rav Chista that appears in a couple of daf for now, where Rav Chista tells us that just as Chazal instituted a concept of Meshicha for the mocher, for the seller, they similarly instituted Meshicha for the buyer. According to Rav Shimon, that's not correct. Rav Shimon disagrees with Rav Chista, because again, as we already pointed out, according to Rav Shimon, all the advantage is in the hands of the seller. He has everything, because he has the money in his possession now. And therefore, it doesn't extend that Chazal will make a takana for the buyer who is already disadvantaged since he's already paid the money for the item. Whereas the Rabbanan disagree, because the Rabbanan, again, assume like Reish Lakish that Meshicha is Koda. But again, even within Rabbi Yochanan's worldview, the Rabbanan are going to subscribe to Rav Chista that, again, this is only the Rabbanan. Again, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't deny the concept of a kid in Meshicha. He just says that's only the Rabbanan. So he's going to argue that the Machlokes between Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan revolves around this statement of Rav Chista, whether we subscribe to Rav Chista or not. Okay, let's look at verses tonight. Aval Amru, Misha Parami Dor Habamo, Hu Asati Parami Misha Eno Oved Yedivuro. Although it's true that Mida Oraisa, Rabbi Yochanan will argue that you don't acquire until you do a Meshicha. Just paying, in other words, I'm sorry, that just paying money is already enough. And according to Reish Lakish, you have to do a Meshicha. But if a person reneges on a verbal agreement, even if no money's been paid, no Meshicha has been done, according to everyone, the person doesn't own the item, Mida Oraisa. But let's say they made a verbal commitment, right? Let's say Reuven agreed to purchase something from Shimon and then he backs out. So the Gemara says that the same God that punished the Dor HaBavel is going to punish someone who reneges on their commitment, even though Mida Oraisa, the transaction, is not yet binding. But if you back out of a verbal commitment, that's also a serious problem. So the Gemara explains, E Amar Bishlama Ma'us Konos, Mishim Achikai Ba'aval, Ela E Amar Ma'us Enon Konos, The Gemara says, I understand if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan that paying money effectuates a kinyan, midah oraisa. That's why reneging under commitment is going to be a serious problem, and you're going to be cursed just like Hashem cursed the Dor HaMavo. But if you hold like Reish Lakish that money does not affect the kinyan, that you require meshicha in order for the kinyan to be valid, so what's the issue here? What's the big deal? Why can't the person reneg? So the Gemara said, no, we shouldn't divide it. Because, again, you're right. Technically speaking, according to Reish Lakish, the transaction is not finalized. But Levi's saying you backed out of a verbal commitment. That's also a problem. It's not, again, it's not on the same level of literally backing out of a deal, but it's still considered enough of a problem that Hashem would rain down a curse upon you. So ask the Gemara, is that true? If it's Varen, Yikai, Ba'al, the Hasadia, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Atha, Pisha, Amu, Talis, Kodan, Dinar, Zah, Ve'en, Dinar, Zah, Kodan, Talis, Mikol, Lako, Kacha, Lacha, Avol Amru Mishapara Me Anche Dora Mamu Me Anche Dora Flago Me Anche Sedom Vavora Ubi Mitzrayim Bayam Hu Asa Vipara Mimi Sheino Ome Bediburo Vahano Se Vino Se Bitzvarim Lokana Vahachuzer Bo Imuach Kachamim Locha Himenu. So the Gemara says like this, that although it's true that Chazal made the following declaration, they said if a person has a talis, they want to, let's say, buy a Shimon's cloak, right? So he's going to pay a gold dinar for the cloak. So Chazal said that the talis acquires the coin, but the coin doesn't acquire the talis. But the bottom line is that if the two of them made a commitment and one of them reneges on it, although technically speaking the transaction has not been effectuated either oraisa, it's not a good thing for either party to back out. And the Gemara says the same God that punished the Dor HaMavo and the Dor HaFlaga and the people of Sodom and Amorah and the tribe and the Yamsuf, he's also going to punish a person who backs out on his word. Then the Gemara comments further that a person, again, who is engaged in a verbal commitment, so he doesn't acquire the item, but if he reneges, the Gemara says that Chazal are not happy with him for reneging on the commitment. The Amar Rava, Anuin Lanu, Ela In Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu. So the Gemara says that the only thing we have here is that Chazal are not happy with you. But there's a big difference between saying Chazal are not happy with you and God is going to rain down the curses of the Dor HaMavo on you. Those are not the same thing. So in other words, how can you conflate those? The Gemara says, no, Dvarim v'ika v'hadayim ma'us kai v'avol, Dvarim v'leika v'hadayim ma'us kai v'avol. The Gemara says it really depends. That there need to be two factors that are met for in order for this very severe curse to be rained down upon you. If you, number one, renege on a verbal commitment, and there's also money that's already been placed on the table. You've already paid for it. Again, this is all within Reish Lakish, right? If you pay for it and you're backing out of a verbal commitment, then God's going to rain down all of these terrible curses on you. But if, let's say, for example, it was a mere verbal commitment without the money to back it up, so then it's not a good thing, but it's just Chazal are happy with you, which is not quite the same thing as saying that God is going to rain down, fire and brimstone like the Dor HaMavo.